We're looking at the life of Jacob, and I want to review just a little bit of what's happened. Jacob has been serving the Lord, or not serving the Lord especially, but hopefully somewhat. But he's been with his with Laban, and working there, first of all, to get a wife. And remember, Laban deceived him. He wanted to marry Rachel. She was the one that he loved. And Laban deceived him and brought in Leah at a marriage night. She woke up in the morning and found out he was married to her sister. So Laban said, all right, I'll strike a deal with you. You've served 7 years for Rachel, and you've got Leah now, but I'll give you Rachel too if you serve another 7 years. So he served 14 years, and then at the end of that time, Laban said, look, you're a real help to me. He was prospering in his work. And so he said, stay on, work for me, and I'll work out a deal with you for wages. And so he agreed to do that. And the agreement was that that which would be born, which would have any spots or any color at all, would be Jacob's. The others would belong to Laban. And he worked for him for 6 more years. Now, at the end of that time, the Lord appeared to Jacob and said to him, now it's time for you to go home. And so Jacob decided to leave, but he knew there was feeling, as far as Laban's sons were concerned, about how he was prospering. And he said later that Laban had changed his wages 10 times, but the Lord prospered him anyway. But he wanted to get away, so he decided to get away quietly. And they left when Laban was gone. Just took out all their flocks and herds and his family with him. And they left and were gone 3 days when Laban came back and he found out and he was upset. And he said they've just taken off secretly, and he was very angry about it. And so he pursued them. He caught up with Jacob, and Jacob, of course, was concerned what's going to happen now. And the Lord had appeared to Laban and said to him, look, don't harm him. Don't do anything against him. And so Laban, when he came, was quite conciliatory. He said, you know, you didn't do the right thing. You took off. I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye to my daughters and to my grandchildren. And besides, you've stolen my household gods, because he was still involved in idolatry. So Jacob said, well, you can search things, and if you find them, you know, but I don't think we've got anything of yours. You've changed my wages 10 times. I served you faithfully, and we just want to go home. I want to go back to where I came from. So they searched, but you remember they didn't find the household gods because Rachel was sitting on them. And anyway, the end of the result of that was reconciliation. And so they put up a monument of stones, and Laban said, this will be a monument really to ensure our peaceful relationships. I'm not going to pursue you. I'm going to let you go. And we're going to be friends. And then he said goodbye, kissed his daughters and his grandchildren, and never saw them again. So it was kind of a tearful party. And Jacob now goes on his way. He's getting concerned as he goes on his way. He knows Esau is going to meet him. What's going to happen? Because Esau had threatened. He said, I'm going to kill you as soon as my father dies. As soon as Isaac dies, I'm going to kill you for what you've done to me. You've cheated me out of my birthright. And so here now, after 20 years, Jacob is coming back. And he's concerned. He's worried. Angels came to meet him to reassure him that God was with him. And as he goes on his way, he thinks, okay, I'm going to send someone there to meet Esau. He sends some to go to meet Esau, and to, you know, make overtures of peace. And the messengers came back and they said, Esau is coming to meet you. He's got 400 men with him. He's got an army with him. And it doesn't look good. And so now Jacob is really concerned. He says, what can I do? Well, he says, I'll divide up my people into two groups. So if he kills off those in one group, the one group will survive. And so he did that. And then he thought, now I better send some presents to him. So he chose a number of his livestock and then divided those up into three groups to send presents. One group would go first, then another group would come along, and another group to Esau to try to assure Esau, look, we want to be friendly. I don't want to have any trouble with you. And so he divides them up and is going to send those on ahead. Now, he's making all these preparations. Then he does pray. He's done what he can do, he feels. And he thinks, well, now I better pray. It would have been better if he'd prayed first. That's often what we do too, isn't it? We do everything we can do, and then we think, well, maybe I should pray. That might help. And so he prayed to God, and he said, oh God, you promised to be with me. You promised to bring me back. You promised to give me this land. And he says, I'm crying out to you for help, because Esau's coming to meet me. Last time I had words with him, he said, I'm going to kill you as soon as Isaac is dead. You're dead. And so he's filled with different fears. That night, the story tells us that as he had sent some of his people on ahead, he's met by God in the form of an angel, like a man, who wrestles with him that night. And Jacob is struggling with this angel all night. An angel that was really God in human flesh. What looked like human flesh. And they struggle and struggle, and Jacob will not give up. And finally, the angel touches his hip and throws it out of joint. And now he's weak. He can't fight. But he clings. He just clings to the angel. And he says, bless me. Bless me. It says in the morning, then the angel blessed him. He said, your name has been Jacob, which means it's a planter, a cheater. He says, your name now is going to be Israel, a prince with God. And you know, there's a picture in that. The next morning he rose up and he went on his way, and it says he was limping because the angel had thrown his hip out, and he probably walked with a limp much of his life. And in a sense, he's a wounded man, but he's a man now who is clinging to God and trusting God as he hadn't before, I believe. And sometimes we too struggle ourselves to work things out and to try to handle our own problems. And the Lord wants us to admit our weakness and to cling to Him and to ask Him for His blessing and faith. And so the picture you have of Jacob is, he's a kind of a broken man in a sense, and yet I think spiritually he was stronger than he was before. Now as we come to the next chapter, which is chapter 33, finally now he meets Esau. And Jacob is full of fear, uncertainty, yet he's prayed, he's trusting God, and Esau comes. You can imagine him here with 400 men behind him. He's coming down the road, and Jacob goes forward to meet him. And it must have been a time of tremendous anxiety for him. What's my brother going to do? What's his attitude going to be? Last I knew, he hated me. Hated me for what I've done. I cheated him, I lied to him, I deceived him, and he was an angry man. And he's got 400 men with him. And I've got my children, my wives, and some servants, but I don't have an army of 400 men. So Jacob goes forward, and it says he falls down on his face 7 times. And he's taking a very humble position before his brother. But Esau then comes to run to meet him, embraces him, kisses him on each cheek, and they must have wept together. It was a moving time. As he now has met his brother is no longer full of hatred. God had changed his heart in the intervening 20 years. And now there's this time when the two brothers, who had been so far apart, are brought together and are hugging one another. And there's a reconciliation. And so it's a beautiful picture as you see these two men in one another's arms. And Esau assuring him of his love, and he's certainly not going to hurt him. And he says, I don't need these gifts. I have my own flocks and herds. But Jacob insisted he take them, so he finally says, okay, I'll do that. And he wanted Jacob to go with him. But Jacob says, look, you don't have flocks and herds with you like I do. I can't push them. I can't move as fast as you can. And so Esau went on ahead, went back to his area, the area of Mount Seir, where he was living at the time. And so you have Jacob now going on his way, and that's where we're going to pick up the story. Jacob is going on his way. He's going toward Shechem. And the last part of chapter 33 we'll start reading, Genesis 33. Verse 18, Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram, and he pitched his tent before the city. And he bought the parcel of land where he had pitched his tent from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected an altar there and called it Elohim Israel. So Jacob buys some land. Now he's settling close to this city, a pagan city, and he buys land there, so it's evident he intends to stay there. He's going to kind of settle down. It's kind of like Lot did, moving close to Sodom and Gomorrah. And so you have Jacob buying the land, and he dug a well there, and the well is still there. If you could go to the West Bank area where it is, it's called Jacob's Well. And you remember in John 4, the woman there spoke of the fact she'd come to the well. This is the well that Jacob had dug. Now, he's sitting there, living close to this city, an evil city, and in chapter 34 tells what happened. He has a daughter named Dinah, and in verse 34, chapter 34, verse 1, it says, now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with him, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourselves. Then Shechem said to her to her father and her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you do to me, I will give. Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give it according to what you say to me, but give me the young woman as a wife." So that's the scene. Dinah begins to mix and to hang out with the young women. Very natural thing to do. She was young. Here were these other young women. The only thing was, they were pagan. They were idolaters. They weren't worshiping the God that Jacob had begun to follow. And as she's hanging out with him, this young man, Shechem, who's the son, really, of the king of this area, is attracted to her. She must have been a beautiful young woman. And he entices her. We don't know whether he used force or what, but anyway, he took her and violated her. And Jacob is very upset. The sons are away. They're taking care of livestock. They're out in the field. Jacob is there, and he's upset about it. His daughter, who no doubt he was concerned for, fathers are concerned for their daughters. They want to preserve their virginity. They want them to make good marriages. They want them to have a happy life. And Jacob was an upset man. What could he do now? Now, he'd made a mistake in that he got too close. He got too involved with these heathen. And the scripture warns about that. And as Christians, we have to guard against that too. That we don't get too involved and too close to the world. And this is what happened. And so his daughter now has been mixing with these other young women, and Shechem sees her, and he, how much he forced her, what was involved, we don't know. But he certainly didn't ask Jacob. And this is the thing you were supposed to do. You want to marry someone, you make arrangements. The parents are involved. This was very important. It still is among Arabs. And there's a tremendous sense that we want to keep and guard the virginity of our daughter. And the brothers felt the same way. In fact, today, if an Arab woman in many countries is forced or violated, her brothers will take vengeance. The person who does that is subject to the death penalty as far as they're concerned. And this happens from time to time. And so that here, there's a real problem. He's gotten involved here in this. Jacob has with his family. And here's this young man, a prince. He wants that girl. He wants his daughter for a wife. They've already slept together. And so Jacob is upset about it all. Now I want to turn back to the book of Corinthians and just read a few verses in the book of the 1 Corinthians. And we'll want to read chapter 6, where we have some instruction being given concerning this sort of thing. Actually, the first scripture I want is in 2 Corinthians, and then we'll come back to 1 Corinthians later. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, there's some instruction here. Paul is writing to the Christians, and he says in verse 14, "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them. Be separate, says the Lord. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, You shall be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Command here, warning, don't mix. He's talking, of course, here about marriage and other alliances where an unbeliever and a believer come together. He says it's not going to work. What agreement do you have? You have to be agreed in marriage, especially in spiritual areas. You know? Now, you can disagree on a lot of things. A husband and wife can. You may not like the same foods. One may like certain foods. I remember when we got married, my wife liked avocados. I've never eaten the things. But she loved avocados. She got me started on them. We made an adjustment. I like avocados now, too. Those things don't matter. Foods, things like this. But on spiritual areas, you have to have agreement. And here you had Shechem. He's a heathen, worshiping idols. Here's Jacob with his family, and his daughter's gotten involved, and it's a bad situation. And so you have this situation that's facing the brothers as they come back. They come back in. And they hear the news. Our sister has been violated. This guy Shechem has violated her. She hasn't been properly married. There was no consultation with the family, her family. And the brothers are very angry. So Jacob has a real problem which he got himself into by moving close to the city, by getting involved with these people when he was told to be separate. God is going to give him the land ultimately. But in the meantime, you be separate and live for God. Now, what are they going to do? Well, the boys come home and they're furious. They said, she's our sister. And she's been violated. This heathen prince has taken her and lay with her. And they were very angry. So, Shechem wanted to marry her. There was something honorable about him. He wanted to marry her. He wanted to be a husband to her. He didn't want to just use her and throw her aside. And so he comes and he says, look, I want to marry your daughter. I'll give you money. What do you want for a dowry? I'll pay it, whatever it is. I'd like to marry her. And so the boys hear this, and the father comes too. He says, look, let's just be friends. Why not? Let's intermarry. And let's, you can settle in our land. You can buy property here. You can become one of us. Which, of course, is what the world wants to do all the time with believers. Break down the wall of separation. Just intermarry with us. Become one of us. And do what we're doing and think like we're thinking and let's intermarry. And the Lord had told Jacob. And he'd been sent back to Haran to get a wife because God said, really, I don't want you intermarrying. I want you to be a separate people for me. I don't want you to break down this wall of separation so that you're worshiping their gods and living like they live. I want you to be a holy people. So what are you going to do? Now, the boys come up with a plan. And they say, and we're going to go back to Genesis 34. And verse 13, the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his fathers, and they spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah their sister. In other words, now they're going to lie. They're going to deceive. They're going to get revenge. They said to him, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for this would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. No longer will we be separate. We'll just become one. We'll do what you say, if you are circumcised. If you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone. We're out of here. We're not going to mix with you." And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. He was a young man with some sense of morality. And so they came to the gate of their city, and they spoke with the men of the city, saying to them, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it, for indeed the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives. Let us give them our daughters. Let's just become one people. Let's mix. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised, will not their livestock, their property, and their every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us." So here Hamor and his son are pleading with him. They're saying, you know, this is going to work out great. We'll, if we can get, just do what they say, then they'll become one of us. And their property will be ours. Their livestock will be ours. We'll profit from this in every way. So let's go ahead and do it. So the whole city now has agreed to this. And so they go ahead, it says, and are circumcised. And it says in verse 25, "It came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. They killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword. They took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city, because their sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city, what was in the field, and all their wealth, all their little ones, and their wives they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in their houses." So, the bloody scene. These two young brothers say, "We're going to have revenge." They're in pain now. They're not feeling like fighting or that. They're recovering from circumcision, which is painful for an adult. Especially if they don't heal as fast as little children. And so these men put on their swords and they go in there and they slaughter the men. Kill them. All of them. Killed all the men of this city. Then they plunder their goods. Take everything they've got. And take the wives, no doubt, as concubines or slave girls. And it's been a great victory, they think. But now Jacob is afraid. He thinks, what have they done? Now we're going to be hated. Other towns around will see what we've done, and they're going to be after us. And so he was very afraid. What can I do now? My sons have taken vengeance, and now we will be hated by all the people around. I can't stay here any longer. And so Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You've troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I." But they said, "Should he treat our sister like a harlot?" "Oh, lecture us," they said to their dad. "You know, he treated our sister like a harlot, and, you know, we've done what we had to do." Jacob says, "I'm afraid. All these people around are going to hate us. I bought some flat land here, but I can't stay here now. They'll wipe us out if we stay. And so he's deeply, deeply concerned. Now God speaks to him. God says to him, well, it's time to wake up, Jacob. You're settling down here, and you're forgetting to be separate. And so God says to him, speaks to him in the next chapter, brings this message to him. God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. And Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you, purify yourselves and change your garments. Let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God, who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me all the way which I have gone. So they gave Jacob and all the foreign gods which were in their hands and the earrings that were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree, which was by Shechem, and they journeyed. And the terror of God was upon the cities all around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. So Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him, and he built an altar there and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared to him when he fled from the face of his brother. Now Deborah, Rebekah's sister, or rather Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried below Bethel under the terebinth tree. So the name of that place was called Elon Akuth. Then God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him. And God said to him, your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. God also said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you, and kings shall come from your body. The land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, I give to you, and to your descendants after you, I give this land. Then God went up from him, and the place where he talked with him. Jacob set up a pillar at the place where he talked with him, and a pillar of stone, and he poured a drink offering on it, and he poured oil on it. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spoke with him, Bethel. Now, it's a moving scene of restoration. God said to him, okay, you're going to leave Shechem. We're mixing here with the heathen. And it's resulted in pain and distress and fear for you. If you're a believer, to compromise and to mix with the world will not bring happiness. It's going to bring pain and distress and suffering. And that's what Jacob was knowing. He's a fearful man. God appears to him. He says, now look, Jacob, let's go back to Bethel, the house of God. This was the place where I appeared to you. And this was the place where you made a covenant with me. And where you said, I was to be your God. You were going to follow me. Now let's go back to Bethel. Clean up your act. Get rid of your foreign gods. You pick them up along the way. These idols, he says, I'm going to be your God, the one and true God. I am God, he says, Almighty. And so Jacob gets rid of these household gods and buries them. And they journey. And as they journey, it says, the fear of the Lord came on the people around them. So no one bothered them. Jacob was afraid he'd be pursued, he'd be attacked. And now that he's doing what God wants, it says the fear of the Lord was on those around. And he journeyed safely to Bethel. And God appears to him, and God speaks to him once again. Bethel, the house of God. Now, if a person gets away from the Lord, gets away from his people, what he needs to do is go back to Bethel. Where's Bethel today? Well, the house of God is what the local church is called. 1 Timothy 3:15. It's the house of God. And so if you've been away from the Lord, if you come back to the Lord's people and meet with them and worship Him and get involved once again, as you should, with the Lord's people, you're on the pathway of blessing. And so God appears to him there and repeats His promise of blessing. He says, look, I'm going to be with you. You've been gone a long time, Jacob. 20 years you were there far away. And during that time, it doesn't speak of him building an altar. It was a time when Jacob was just so busy, in a sense, making money, getting a family and all the rest, that he wasn't close to God the way he should have been. And this sometimes happens for us as Christians, especially when you're younger. You get married, there are all the cares of this world, you're wanting to get a home, you're wanting to prosper in this world, and it's easy to put the things of God on the back of your thinking. And Jacob had done this for 20 years. Now God says to him, look, it's time to get renewed in your devotion to me. It's time for you to remember that time when I appeared to you as you were leaving your home. I appeared to you at Bethel, and remember that, Jacob? Remember how I spoke to you, and you spoke to me, and you said, I'll be your follower. You'll be my God. I'm going to follow you. Well, you haven't done too good a job. Come back to Bethel. That's what he said. Come back to Bethel. Renew your dedication to the Lord. And Jacob does that at Bethel. So it's a time of real restoration for him, and a time when he once again renews that commitment to God that he once had. And at times we as Christians have to do that. We drift away, we begin to get involved in the world, we begin to lose our fervor and our love for the Lord. The Lord would say, come back to Bethel. Renew your devotion to me. Renew your consecration to me. Keep yourself separate from the world. Clean up your act. Get rid of any idols in your house. And put me first. And so Jacob has done this. Now he journeys on south. And he's down near Bethlehem. And Rachel goes into labor. Now this is her second child. She's had Joseph. And now she has another son. And this was a wife that Jacob loved. Now he had Leah, another wife, and he had a couple of their servants who were concubines who had children by him, but they didn't have the legal status of being a wife. This was a common practice in those days. You have to remember, you know, as you think of Jacob and these things too, they didn't have the laws given through Moses. And they didn't have these instructions spelled out how you were to function, really, in marriages. So they were influenced by their environment. And having more than one wife was common. Having concubines was common. And so Jacob had that situation. But of all these, now he has four women he's been sleeping with. He had children by. But Rachel was the one he loved. Now she's in labor. She's going to have another child. And I'm sure Jacob was very anxious. He was very concerned. He loved Rachel. And she has hard labor, it says. And she's struggling to give birth. And in the process, she dies. And Benjamin is born. So it's kind of a moving scene outside of Bethlehem. And if you go there today, there's a place called Rachel's Tomb. It's a place that's a sacred place for the Jews especially. We're not sure its exact location. It could be. But it was in that area. that Rachel died and was buried. And so it was a moving time for Jacob as he buries her, and he leaves this one who he really loved. She'd been his wife for over 20 years, or close to it, and he was burying her. I think it's one of the hardest things that probably comes in a marriage, when you have to bury the one you've been married to. You, someone who you've slept with in the most intimate relationship on earth, had children by, and you stand by the graveside. And I'm sure Jacob wept. He left there and he began to move on south. He's going back to where Isaac, his father, is. Hasn't seen him in over 20 years. Goes back to Hebron, and we read in verse 27, Jacob came to his father, Isaac, at Mamre, or Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had dwelt. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years, so Isaac breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. So he gets back in time to see his father before he dies. It must have been a tearful reunion as he saw his father, who he hadn't seen for a number of years, and they were once again reunited. When he dies, the two brothers bury their father in Hebron. Life goes on, but there are lessons to learn from these who have lived before. And as you think of the lessons in this section we were in today, certainly a lesson is don't compromise, don't mingle with the world, don't get away from the Lord. Stay close to Bethel, and the Lord will bless you, and you'll know real happiness.